My name's David Harvey. I started playing music when I was about 10 years old. I started playing the drums in the Boys Brigade. But then I wanted to play in a group. And I met some lads at St Hilda's Church on Greatfield Estate, who were actually at the time trying to put a band together. But they didn't need a drummer. I wanted to play the drums. They didn't need a drummer. So what they basically wanted was a guitar player. So I said, well, look, if I buy a guitar, will you let me join the band? So they said, yeah, of course, you know. So I bought a guitar, a cheap one. My mother bought it, and she got it on HP, which we used to call HP in those days, hire purchase. And I joined the band, started to learn to play. And a guy called David Fowler, who was the lead guitar player, Gavin Wignall was on drums, and we were using different bass players at the time because the bass... it was difficult to get a good bass player at the time. So, and the first gig we did was at the school for the school dances. And then we did a St Hilda's Church on Greatfield Estate. And we earned 50 pence each, which was 10 shillings in those days. We thought we were doing well because the average wage was something like about £4 or £5 a week. So 50 pence for playing music was quite good. And then we eventually got things going over a period of a year or so, started to do local gigs around Hull, and we had an opportunity to go into a competition at the Skyline Ballroom. And in the competition, we got through to the finals, and in the finals was Scott Madison and the Rangers. We were called the Panthers, so we joined and we did really well. We came second, and Ricky Knight and the Crusaders, who eventually became the Hullabaloos and went to America and became quite famous, did loads of television shows in America, on stage with the Supremes and all the famous people in America at the time. They became quite a well-known band and dyed the hair blonde, and they came from Hull, yeah. So we went to do this competition, and then Skyline Ballroom rang and asked us if we would go and play for one of their dinner evenings, and they were offering us £15 for the night, which we thought was absolute. We thought we'd hit the big time. So we went, did this show there, and then we got regular gigs after that. We were asked to do a few dinner dances. They did these special dance evenings, so we used to go on as a group and play. And the big band was the resident band at the Skyline Ballroom at the time, called the Skyliners. And so we had different shows, and we got a piano player with the band, and he was doing some Jerry Lee Lewis music, and he put his foot on the piano to play like Jerry Lee Lewis, and the piano player from the big band, the Skyliners, jumped on stage and pulled his foot off the piano because he didn't want him to damage the piano. So from that point, we used to go and do different shows, and then eventually I got a job when I was 17 as a professional drummer at the... I went on to drums because I was having drum lessons at the time from the Freddie Ashworth, who was the drummer at the Mecca Ballroom. And he said there was an audition coming up for a drummer with the trio, so I got the job with the trio, which was called the JB3. And because we worked at the Mecca, we got early entrance into the Skyline Ballroom. And so at that time, we could go in and watch the bands, and we could meet some of the bands before the general public came in. And one night I went in and Jimi Hendrix was on, and we managed to watch Jimi Hendrix. Later on, after Jimi Hendrix had gone off, he'd blown up four amplifiers that night. He blew up four amplifiers. And I went into the dressing room because I wanted to meet Mitch Mitchell, who was the drummer with Jimi Hendrix. And I went into the dressing room because they had no security in them days, no security. And there was Jimi Hendrix sat on the floor, still with his guitar in his hand. And I just said, "Oh, hello, Jimmy, great show." And he just said, "Yeah, man. Yeah, cheers, man." You know, that type of thing. And I had a quick word with Mitch Mitchell. And then Not so long after that, Eric Clapton and Cream came to the ballroom, which was the Skyline Ballroom again. And the stage was only about a foot high from the floor. So that day, me and Mick Ronson, who was eventually became the guitar player with David Bowie, me and Mick Ronson went to see Eric Clapton because Mick wanted to see how Eric bent the strings. And we went in early, so we saw Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce, who was the bass player, and Ginger Baker, the drummer. And I got chatting to Ginger Baker, so he said, I want you to just play my kit, man, while I listen to what it sounds like. And I said, OK, sure. And I went on and I threw my stick up and caught it as I was playing. And he went, oh, how do you do that? He said, I'm going to do that, he said. So when they went on stage in the evening, he was a little bit worse for wear. I'm not sure what it was over. And every time he threw his stick up, he dropped it. So the roadie had to keep running on and pick his sticks up and put them back in the drums. And then eventually he caught one, so we all cheered. But at that time, me and Mick were stood directly in front of Eric Clapton. We could have actually played Eric Clapton's guitar because we were virtually level with his guitar. So right in front of him. So there was so Mick could watch everything that Eric Clapton did, and that was at the Skyline Ballroom. Over that period of time, we saw lots of bands there, including Pink Floyd, Chris Farlow, and Chris Farlow's drummer was a young lad whose name was Carl Palmer, and he eventually became famous with the band Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And it was nice talking to him as well. He was only 17 years old at the time, and he was playing with Chris Farlow. And I saw Chris Farlow when he came to play in Hull again, and he played at the Springhead Pub in Anlaby. And I sat in the back room with him talking about when he had Carl Palmer on drums, and we were chatting about it, you know. So that was interesting. Also at that time, bands like the Hollies came. Dear me. Just so many bands. There was Zoot Money. There was the Ram Jam Band. And loads and loads of other bands that came that were just excellent. And we had that opportunity to go in and watch them for free because working at the Mecca. And sometimes the bands and would come over to our side and see us at the Mecca. And luckily enough, even at the Mecca, we supported bands like The Who, Sounds Incorporated, who was backing other artists at the time. And we had to go on stage after The Who, The Kinks, there's plenty of stories about The Kinks, and I could tell a few, but they were fighting backstage. And so all that period of time, there was so much going on in Hull. There was about 60 to 80 professional musicians in Hull playing at different venues, full time. So it was an incredible time in Hull in the 60s and the early 70s. So that was basically the basic essence of everything. I've got here as well that Mick Ronson came to do an audition at the Mecca for his band to play at the Mecca, and they unfortunately asked me to go and tell him to stop playing because they didn't like it.
How did you know Mick then, out of interest?
I lived near Mick, right? Now Mick used to come past my house quite often when he was going to work, and my mother used to say, because I only knew him because he was a musician, and he was a little bit older than me, well, younger, sorry. And he'd passed my house, and my mother used to ask him to come in and have a cup of tea and a sandwich, because she always felt, because he was always a very thin lad. So my mother used to make him a sandwich, you know. Probably haven't told anyone that, but so that was Mick Ronson. And then Mick Ronson obviously went in his direction, and I was more commercial, and Mick went on with the Rats, and then eventually joined up with David Bowie, and did really well for himself, you know. So, and he was with Ian Hunter, and he was with a lot of people. Traffic, I didn't mention Traffic, did I? Stevie Winwood and Traffic. Chris Farlow, I mentioned the Hollies, didn't I? All the bands came at the time. Traffic came to Hull, and Stevie Winwood was on keyboards and organ, and he was singing vocals. And that's when his hit had just come out, Give Me Some Lovin'. And that was his big hit at the time. And then Chris Farlow, I've already mentioned, came, and he had Carl Palmer on drums, which was quite interesting. Right, Johnny Tillotson came. And this was when I think it changed from the Skyline Ballroom to the Baileys. And Johnny Tillotson came, who was a famous singer in the 60s. And he came back to my sister's house for something to eat. And it's the first time I've ever seen someone remove the meat from the sandwich and just eat the meat, because he didn't eat bread, because he said it was fattening. And this was all those years ago. So that was Johnny Tillotson. I'm trying to think of his big hit was. But we saw all the people that we saw at the Baileys when it changed from the Skyline Ballroom to Baileys. All the stars came to Baileys, and there was Tommy Cooper. I was lucky enough to meet Tommy Cooper, and there was people like, I'm sure Ken Dodd did it, but I'm not quite sure about that. But all the people that came, including Norman Wisdom, yeah. So I saw Norman Wisdom as well. He put a fantastic show, and he had a stooge with him who was the straight man. And Norman Wisdom was just superb. So over the years, when it was Skyline and when it was the Baileys, loads and loads of really good shows came to Baileys. Lots of them were also originally came to the Skyline Ballroom. It was a great venue in Hull. And some of the stars that came were just fantastic. But a lot of them, including Jimi Hendrix at the time, was just an up-and-coming guitar player who wasn't the legend he became. And the same with Eric Clapton. I mean, he just had a couple of hits, and he actually put Jimi Hendrix together, put the band together, and got Jimi Hendrix to England to tour, and put the band together for him with Mitch Mitchell on drums. And, yeah, so... But it was great meeting these people at the time that weren't legends at the time, but eventually became legends. So that was a great experience for myself, you know.
So you were saying about your time in the band. So can you explain a bit more about, obviously, the Skyliners and the Sky Sounds and bits and pieces like that, how you
now,
were playing?
After the Skyliners, after the Skyliners, because the Skyliners were quite a big band, and I think they became a little bit expensive. I think they were about a 15-piece band. I just did the odd gig with them as a kind of replacement. And then another band took over from them, and as far as I can remember, it was called the Eddie Gray Band. And I also, because I was playing at the Mecca, I'd learned to read music on the drums, so they needed what they call a dep, and I went and depped with the Eddie Gray Band. And what surprised me is they were doing a lot of some of my favourite music, which was James Brown music. So it was nice to play something like that with a big band, because I was lucky enough to see James Brown live in Germany a few years later, and it was a fantastic band. So the Eddie Gray Band was doing more modern material than, say, for instance, the Skyliners, that were more of a dance band, like a kind of an orchestra that played dance music, waltzes, foxtrots, quick steps, and a bit of a Latin American, which is what they also had at the Mecca. But then the Eddie Gray Band did more modern music, more pop music, but there was kind of a big small band with brass players that were doing more modern music at the time, more music from the 60s and 70s. But I don't know what happened after that.
So what kind of dates? What kind of dates are we looking at?
That was in the mid to late '60s. Okay. Mid to late '60s, early '70s.
So were the Skyliners there from the start then?
As far as I remember, I think they were the first band, because when it first opened, I think they wanted a big band, and I think the Skyliners was the first band to go in there, and then we changed because we won that competition. I forgot to mention that, because we won the. Or we came second in the competition at the Skyline Ballroom. We changed our name from the Panthers to the Sky Sounds, and then the Sky Sounds played all over East Yorkshire for quite some time. And then I left them to go professional at the Mecca Ballroom. But the Sky Sounds continued. And then I got the job as the band leader at the Mecca in Hull after I travelled to a couple of other Mecca ballrooms, which was Norwich and then Leeds. But and then I came back to Hull. And when I came back to Hull, I got a job as the youngest band leader on the Mecca, and I was 19 years old then. But I was running the trio, and then we were playing opposite the Gene Mayo Band. Before that, it was the Ivor Kirchin Band when I was with the trio, when it wasn't my band, that was the JB3. So that's about it for that era, really.
So what was it like? Can you explain a bit what it was like inside? I guess what it changed to between Skyline and Baylor's as well. Because yeah. did it shut down, or did it just change overnight, or how did it work?
I can't really remember what happened, to be honest, because it's so long ago. But all I can remember is when it was more like a big hall. When you went upstairs, it was like a big hall. They used to have a couple of bouncers on the door at the bottom and a couple of bouncers at the door on the top. And you go into a big room, and they used to have sometimes four stages set up with different bands on each stage, so that different sections of the ballroom were split off, so that a band was on one side and then they'd come off, another band would go on. And that's when I saw Pink Floyd for the first time, and they had students dropping paint onto a slide, and they were projecting it onto the stage, so it looked very psychedelic. And that's when psychedelia first came out as well, and that was, nobody'd seen that in Hull with Pink Floyd, and these students projecting this all these different colours onto the stage by dropping paint onto these trays and then projecting it onto the stage. It looked absolutely fantastic, because Pink Floyd themselves weren't what you would call a show band. They didn't move around very much, but because of all these lights and these different psychedelic sort of movement going on, it looked like they were moving, you know. When it changed over, they decided to change it over to a nightclub and make it as a kind of a big like a big theatrical nightclub. And the stage moved over from where the bands used to play, and they moved it over to one section and put dressing rooms at the back. And that's when all the different shows came, all the fairly famous people, you know. And they had lots of shows on from there. And I don't know what the date was that it changed, but someone will probably know.
I think it was 71. I think it changed to.
I know it was early 70s, and it became quite a good venue. Became a really good venue. In Hull, there was quite a few venues at the time, and that became one of the good ones. And there was lots of entertainment. You could go and see people fairly close up, quite famous people fairly close up. You know, the stage was never very big. It was only about a foot or 2 foot high. So, you know, everything, all the artists that came were quite accessible. And Norman Wisdom, when he came, he was walking around the streets, people running up and shaking his hand. And so he was a good guy, was Norman Wisdom. And he put on a really good show, worked really hard. Used to take a lot of punishment on the stage. People used to punch him and all sorts with a boxing glove on, and used to have a machine that used to punch him, and, you know. So he was quite a character. And I can't remember whether Tommy Cooper walked around the streets in Hull, but I was lucky enough to work with Tommy Cooper in another venue. I think it was the Wakefield Theatre Club. And Tommy Cooper, in his dressing room, he'd leave his door open and he'd be stood there in his vest, his long underpants, white ones, like woolly type underpants, and garters on his legs. And when you walked by the door, "Good evening, Mr. Cooper," and you looked at him and you just absolutely, you was nearly in tears just looking at him, because he looked so funny before he went on. Then he'd put his suit on just before he went on stage. And one night we went to one evening we got invited to go to a nightclub on the last night. Tommy Cooper told us all to meet there, and he said, He said, right, lads, he got us all together, and Eric Sykes was there. I was sat near Eric Sykes when we eventually went in, but we all met in our cars outside this nightclub. Tommy Cooper said, come here, come here. And we all came over, and he said, I don't want people to know it's me. So he said, I want you all to go in. He said, I've booked a table down the side. And he said, I want you all to go in, sit down. And he said, I'm going to sneak in. We said, okay, Tommy, because we thought he was telling the truth. We walked in and all sat down, and as I say, I was sat near Eric Sykes, and then all of a sudden the door swung open and Tommy Cooper came out and did this, and everybody went, it's Tommy Cooper. And he was trying to tell us he wanted to be discreet. So that was the type of person he was. He was just hilarious, really funny guy.